All right. So again, this is the second day of the Lojong module here at Waltham Buddhist Meditation Group. And questions of, well, why are we training our minds? And what does that mean? And is that really necessary? And how do I do it? And what are these 59 slogans anyway? Well, tonight, is going to be an experiential opportunity for us to just jump into the fullness of these slogans. And what I find personally for me, and I invite you to bring your own personal experiences of these slogans into the room in a bit, is that it changes from year to year, from day to day, in terms of what this slogan may mean to me at this point in my life. And so there is nothing entirely fixed, in my opinion, though there are many beautiful books that we are using with which to dive into the slogans. But I invite you to use tonight as a full-on opportunity to explore what a slogan might mean for you right now in your life. And so to start us out, I thought, let's get the full overview of what these 59 slogans are and the 7 points under which they fall. And so there's a tradition in terms of how we're going to chant these together. And as the one who's currently leading, what I'll do is I'll sing out, chant out each of the points, but then we will say together each of the slogans. And again, just let this resonate for you. And we'll go forward and we'll do an experiment in the slogans as they speak to us. Root text of the 7 points of training the mind. Point one, the preliminaries, which are the basis for Dharma practice. I prostrate to the great compassionate one. First, train in the preliminaries. Point two, the main practice, which is training in bodhicitta. Regard all dharmas as dreams. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. Self-liberate even the antidote. Rest in the nature of alaya, the essence. In post-meditation, be a child of illusion. Sending and taking should be practiced alternatively. These two should ride the breath. Three objects, three poisons, and three seeds of virtue. In all activities, train with slogans. Begin the sequence of sending and taking with yourself. Point three, transformation of bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment. When the world is filled with evil, transform all mishaps into the path of Bodhi. Drive all blames into one. Be grateful to everyone. Seeing confusion as the four kayas is unsurpassable shunyata protection. Four practices are the best of methods. Whatever you meet unexpectedly, join with meditation. Point four, showing the utilization of practice in one's whole life. Practice the five strengths, the condensed heart instructions, the Mahayana instruction for ejection of consciousness at death is the five strengths. How you conduct yourself is important. Point five, evaluation of mind training. All Dharma agrees at one point. Of the two witnesses, hold the principal one. Always maintain only a joyful mind. If you can practice even when distracted, you are well trained. Point six, disciplines of mind training. Always abide by the three basic principles. Change your attitude, but remain natural. Don't talk about injured limbs. Don't ponder others. Work with the greatest defilements first. Abandon any hope of fruition. Abandon poisonous food. Don't be so predictable. Don't malign others. Don't wait in ambush. Don't bring things to a painful point. Don't transfer the ox's load to the cow. Don't try to be the fastest. Don't act with a twist. Don't make gods into demons. Don't seek others' pains as the limbs of your own happiness. Point 7, guidelines of mind training. All activities should be done with one intention. Correct all wrongs with one intention. Two activities, one at the beginning, one at the end. Whichever of the two occurs, be patient. Observe these two, even at the risk of your life. Train in the three difficulties. Take on the three principal causes. Pay heed that the three never wane. Keep the three inseparable. Train without bias in all areas. It is crucial always to do this pervasively and wholeheartedly. Always meditate on whatever provokes resentment. Don't be swayed by external circumstances. This time practice the main points. Don't misinterpret. Don't vacillate. Train wholeheartedly. Liberate yourself by examining and analyzing. Don't wallow in self-pity. Don't be jealous. Don't be frivolous. Don't expect applause.
So those are the 59 slogans, just to get an overview. And these were a long rot from long, long ago, as Michael Fagan pointed out, in terms of, well, how do we go out and off the cushion, especially in post-meditation, how do we go out and be in the world taking all that we've been cultivating on the cushion? And these slogans are an offering for us to consider. For instance, I do every day, I pull a card as this is something that, aha, I need to work on for today. And when I am in my more lucid moments, I can bring it into every situation that I come in contact with. And so for this experiment tonight, what we're going to do is eventually we're all going to pick a card. This will be your card for the night. And I have some written out instructions in terms of how we're going to move forward. Let's keep this a silent, meditative atmosphere. As you are busy contemplating this slogan as it pertains to your life. When we do this in the summer, we usually go outside and do some sky gazing. There is a fabulous moon out there, and there's some moon bathing that can happen if you bundle up, of course. And so we'll spend about 15, 20 minutes in our own contemplative sitting, walking, moonbathing, breathing, witnessing all that is around you while you, from time to time, come back to this slogan as a kind of koan for yourself to consider how does this apply to me at this point in time. And I'll give you another handout, which these are suggestions of some questions and how to use your particular slogan.
And so as this is being passed around, Michael, if you could kindly just begin reading this aloud.
Contemplative art practice. Slow walking. Use the gaze of the heart. Everyone and everything is connected with a thread of light. Returning to the same slogan over and over again. See what comes of this. Think of this slogan as your very own koan practice. Questions to consider. What does this slogan mean? How can you see this slogan applying to your life right now? Are there ways you haven't yet applied this slogan in your life yet?
So we'll use this, we'll use some time, and what I will do in about 15 to 20 minutes, I'll go around outside, around the place, and just ring a bell to encourage people to come back into the circle. There are pencils and pens in the back table if you wish to indeed do some writing with this, or you can just let it settle inside your mind. And we'll come back, and as you feel comfortable, we'll share about what we may have discovered for our particular slogan. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you. So let's shuffle this around.
In case we know which card is which.
All right. So let's pass it around here. And so we'll just keep it to ourselves. It's kind of fun.
Can you pause this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
As you feel comfortable, it would be great to hear, first of all, what was the slogan you picked up and any reflections that you have about this slogan. Someone like to start? Yeah.
I'm sorry, do you want to hear the
Oh, yes, definitely.
What are the greatest defilements? And
what does the slogan say?
Yeah, the slogan is, what are the greatest of... Oh, start with the greatest.
Yes.
And so, of course, I had a tough time starting with it, right? But, I said to myself, what's the feedback my friends give me the most? And so it took me about 1 second to figure that one out. So I decided to follow that up with reflecting each day for a week on to talk to. So that's, but I thought it was very interesting. There was not a wide variation in what my friends were giving me feedback on. This is, over the past few years. So it came up pretty consistently. Indicated I was in somewhat denial.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mine was observe these two even at the risk of your life. I thought that was a little heavy. especially trying to figure out what the two were. But it didn't take me long to come up with two that was really important to me right now. I have been studying a lot, and I have been thinking with my mind very hard, trying really to understand what I'm reading, give it form so that I can understand it and see how it fits in my life. But I'm not reading with my heart. And that's just as important, to meditate, to be quiet, to feel your way through the darkness instead of think your way through. And I haven't been paying that much attention to my own heart. I was always very logical. I have a PhD in research methods. I like equations where they all add up the same on both sides. And I thought of one of the things I used to do at work was we had this budget for about 50 things, and there were like 20 things across. And on one side was how much these 50 things spent, and then the bottom was the total. And the only numbers that I had were last year's and this year's total. So I had this huge Excel spreadsheet where I was constantly changing the numbers so it would add up right at the bottom. Took days. And that's how my head worked. But it's not serving me well. Yeah. It's not serving me well now. Sitting quietly meditating is difficult for me. And leading with my heart, reading with my heart is difficult.
Thank you.
Mine was, I think, pretty straightforward. It was, don't be jealous. So that I definitely can connect with. I immediately started thinking about the family I grew up in, and it was like we were just swimming in jealousy. Everything was defined by this one had that, this one had that. There was an assumption, a presumption of jealousy. And I'm enough away from it to see that that's different than usually how I approach things. Nevertheless, there's always more that I can do. What does the slogan mean? I think it kind of the converse is appreciate what you have and being grateful for everything. One thing I noticed after walking around and thinking about this, your second line, maybe returning to center, everyone and everything is connected to the thread of light. And I was thinking about how, like, one of the worst things that jealousy does is that it disconnects people from each other. Mm-hmm. It's very much a it's kind of others them, and it's just very much you against them and all that. And then the other thing I was thinking about is just very recently we did sympathetic joy, and the idea of just being joyful about what other people have. So it's a perfect antidote to jealousy. So this was pretty easy. I mean, the superficial understanding was easy. Mm-hmm. There's always more that can be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
I just have to use the word antidote. And mine was self-liberating, even the antidote, so that's why I raised my hand. And I was also glad that I didn't get one of the ones that referred to a certain, like, two or three, because I would have been confused about what I was talking about, probably. But this one, I think I, you know, get the gist of, which is, you know, if you have a thought or just, you know, an insight where if, you know, you feel like something is right in your mind, you know, for example, if you're jealous and you think of, you know, what's the antidote to jealousy, or if you're feeling, you know, like something that is unpleasant, that you, you know, sort of feel like you understand what the right way to do it is, so to speak, that too is impermanent, that moment where you feel like you understand that. And the idea is not to grasp onto that, you know, even though it might feel more pleasant than, you know, the negative feeling that you might have, you know, it sort of makes sense to let that go. But when you feel like, you know, you actually, you know, are sort of correcting something that's not right, there's a tendency to want to hold on to that. But that's really just kind of fighting against impermanence as well. And it's going to lead to suffering, you know, just as if you were, you know, pushing something away, anything. And so that's how I understand it anyway. And in my own experience, lately I feel like I have a tendency to kind of beat myself up about things and sort of like, why do I keep doing this? Or why do I even feel this way? You know, like what's wrong with me? Why can't I fix it? You know, that type of thing, and then just sort of leads down a harmful or it's not helping anybody to do that. Even though, you know, your intentions may be good, but sort of just holding on to that, trying to, you know, wish it was a different way, even though you feel like you mean well in the long run. But the idea really should be to be in the moment, and if it happens, it happens. But you're not trying to sort of bring this other thing into this moment that, you know, you might not even be able to you might not even be able to access at that point in time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't vacillate. don't go back and forth when you take it on, whether it's mind training or meditation. Don't go back and forth, but you need to, when you take on the plan, stick with it, I guess it means. And I think that, you know, we probably all go through periods of time when we don't stick with it, and we need a renewal. We need to start over, or say we need to do this more consistently. I think that's what it means to me, anyhow, that we need to every once in a while refresh ourselves and stay with it, or take a new approach to it, and that's why we have the Sangha, the way to keep our consistency and help each other. So that's what I think, maybe don't vacillate to renew ourselves every day about studying the practice and doing the meditation and helping each other out with staying with the practice, and that the Lojong is a way of that mind training that goes along with off the cushion. How do we react in our lives?
Chris.
So mine was study the three challenges. So I took that as, you know, what are my three challenges? And so, I have so many. How do I narrow down to three? Once my mind became a little bit relaxed, it snapped into my head. The first one was forgiveness. And so then I started, what does that mean? It's like, well, like forgiveness A and B, forgiveness for myself, of myself, and forgiveness of other people. Those are the two parts of the forgiveness. And then I thought, well, I don't want to stick on this too long because I want to go and discover what the other two. And then it's like, okay. And then pop, and then the second one came in, which was judgment. It's just funny, like that. They just popped in my head. It was really cool. And I just, instead of questioning it, I just took it. It's like, okay, I'm judgment. I'm judgy already. And then the third one, it took a little longer, and then all of a sudden the word longing came up, and it's like longing. That's a weird one. Okay, well I'll try that one on, and then I kind of stayed with that because it was the oddest. Like the first two I understood well, but the third one, the longing, was really hard. So like, well, anyway. So I thought about what I long for now, what I longed for in the past that I don't long for anymore. So that was kind of a cool thing for me to think about how, Megan, you said something about that we do change through the years, how these slogans can change. But because I didn't experience these insights back then, I just sort of went backwards and thought, yeah, it's funny how you think of things one way when you're younger, and then as you get older, this letting go of so many things. So it was interesting. And then I went back and I dug a little deeper into, the forgiveness and people that I never thought that I would have ever forgiven in my life, and I have forgiven them over the years, and the couple of people who I'm working on now. When he's forgiven, I don't get it. I'm not forgiving that person. But it's like, well, how did you forgive the other two people, or the other two or three people that popped into my mind? No, it was just interesting. And then the judgment was, I could go on and on about that one, and something I really need to work on. It was really interesting. Experience.
Thank you.
So mine was don't ponder others. And so I went outside across the street, and I was just standing by the trees, and I was like, what does this really mean? And so all of a sudden something just popped in my head, like you. And I realized, like, I was looking at the trees and they were looking at me, and they weren't, there was no judgment, just looking at me. And so for me, that slogan meant, not to judge. And so, sort of applying that to my life right now, you know, my son, I can apply it to my son, Jared, because he's a lot different than most people that I come in contact with. And so I find that I've been judging him a lot lately, but unfairly. And also I realize, to be more forgiving and kinder to myself, to give myself more credit for change. And so I think, the way that I haven't applied the slogan in my life yet is, I'm very hard on myself, and I don't give myself enough credit to change habits or to change thought patterns. So I think, to sort of be kinder and more forgiving to myself and less judgmental of myself, sort of what came out for me in this slogan. So it's good to be here. Thank you.
I had rest in the nature of alya, the essence. Mm-hmm. So the wording of that phrase made me break it down, starting with the last word, essence, for me personally. And so sometimes I have too much momentum in my day-to-day routine these days. I'm doing things at a very specific time, and even in the next few days, I have an appointment tomorrow, I'm getting on a plane on Saturday, you got the idea. So I interpreted this phrase as a reminder for slowing down, rest in the, and even word by word, starting with rest. That was very not jarring exactly, but there was a certain directness to it that I felt too much recently, and so I contemplated it word by word, and I felt that that was helpful for the slogan as reminder and the slogan as contemplation.
Okay. Yeah. I had change your attitude but remain natural.
We all wanted to take it.
and so I went out and I thought, like, I looked at the moon and I moved around and I thought attitude can kind of be the perspective, because at first I was looking from in the parking lot. And then the moon was between all the wires, as if that was where the moon was. When I moved around, well, oh, it's not behind the wires. That's just where I was looking from. And sort of as I looked at different things, and then I even looked at lights, and I said, well, the lights aren't as nice as the moon. And I said, no, the lights are like the moon. They give us light at night when there's not. You know, all these different things where you have an attitude about them that you bring, and even just habitual tendencies of how you think about a thing, like the lights are bad and the moon is good. And then I thought the natural is sort of more trying to act for my better nature, my Buddha nature. And it's the idea of thinking, noticing, like, how am I looking at things? And in particular, when you look at people, and when you have like a what I think of that person, and you have sort of this attitude, this person is nice but, or they're usually okay and that kind of thing, that you like labeled it. And when, and I know because I teach, and I have every kid has been labeled some way or another, because I have to have like a perspective, I think, when I'm doing this, that's my idea. I have to have a view of them. And so I sort of thought of it as looking at people with fresh eyes and trying to approach the people I think of as difficult with more compassion instead of my default, which is sort of anger and impatience with what they're doing. And I sort of brought up that someone I know who died very recently was a very good person and could be really difficult, and sort of that piece of, and then my husband and son have been helping to clean out the house, and my husband's been telling me stories of stuff, and I'm like, oh, like looking at what where they lived and what they had, you suddenly have a different sense of them. And that idea that when we can drop our idea of I have to have a view of everybody and keep that, really is a way to change my attitude.
Mine.
Mine
was too simple. Don't malign others.
Malign others.
And I certainly picked it myself, so I have to say, I have to own up to the fact that when the basket went around, without looking at any of them, I reached down a ways and picked it up without reading it. So that can't be an accident. I certainly do malign others. Some are kind of obvious, such as getting annoyed at my wife without knowing what's going on. That can happen quite a bit, which is rather obvious. I don't think I spend much effort maligning the boss of this country, because he seems too simple to me to be worth maligning. But when I look at television, I see an awful lot of self-serving people, and I tend to malign them, or I tend to malign certain corporations that are making my life very difficult right now and interfering with my ability to use a computer, and I tend to malign them quite a bit. The people who I tend to align quite a bit, I think, are the ones who are on television or internet or whatever and seem to me to be having a lot of self-serving interests, and I spend some effort maligning those people, and it's hard for me to give that one up. But it can't be an accident that don't malign others or something, which I see if I feel someone's talking too much or if I feel someone's being too simplistic, I do tend to malign them. Certainly work on this. The slogan is extremely simple. Right now I have plenty of work to do not maligning many times each day. Are there ways you haven't yet applied the slogan? Yes, I think so. And again, it has to do with those who strike me as being interfering or making a lot of trouble in the world by their self-centeredness. I see a lot of that on television. So, and I'm not maligned, though, so that would be quite a challenge to work on. But fundamentally, I take it that this is not an accident. That each of us chose a slogan, whether we chose it blindly or whatever. There are no accidents.
Thank you.
Well, I felt like this was a disaster here, which is what I often feel. But my slogan was, if you can practice, even when distracted, you are well trained. And I thought, woo, can I have another one? So I'm I don't even practice when I'm not distracted. I mean, I'm a total slouch here. So, and I really, relate to what you said, Craig, about, I just beat myself up and, anyway, so it doesn't help anything. But I even had to cheat and go back to the book because I saw Emily look at a book. So I said, I'm going to look this up and tell you what it means. But, I sort of had an idea. It, means to practice automatically without thinking about it. I didn't think of that as much as I did think of, when everything's like a real mess, and there's chaos. If you can practice, then that's very difficult. I thought of a couple of things I've talked about before, like being a helper. I was a physical therapist. Linda was an occupational therapist with me. And it's so easy to stand above people instead of just standing with them. Mm-hmm. And so easy, it's just almost universal in the hospitals. And I think in teaching, sorry, teachers, I just see it everywhere, that if you have a position of any sort of authority, to not stand over people and to just stand with them is so hard. It's just so tempting. And so that has always been an issue that, I've tried to work on for a long time. And I was aware when I was working in hospitals, so that's how I applied it, I think, in my life, that I was trying to practice kindness and practice compassion without being the helper, standing over the helpee. And, I was a patient for a while, too. And I remember, people putting their arm around me and going, oh, but we're trying to help you, and that was when you knew the knife was at your back. It was just really difficult, sometimes. So, I thought of the last couple days. I seem to have returned to working with the homeless just a little bit. Last night I went to visit someone in the hospital for who I am his healthcare proxy. And I had told that they had called me and asked me to do if they could do a procedure, and I had said, well, if something happens, don't use any extraordinary measures, which is really to say that was like, and then other people kind of, I called the supervisor just to let her know. He said, well, I don't think we're at that point yet. And I said, okay, I'm resigning. Anyway, so I went and had a talk with him. And anyway, so it was a really big deal. But to try not to stand above him, and to try to figure out what he wants, but also fully inform him of what his options are. He's an undocumented immigrant who came here many years ago with almost no education, and to really, for him to be informed is, is really hard. But it's hard for me at the community day center not to stand over people. I mean, this guy is like very charming and likable. There's so many people there I do not like. So many of the young people that are sort of maybe harder, drug users. It's just,
it's very hard to practice. Loving kindness, compassion, and I am not there yet. And I'm not there in my family too. Like I feel like, well, people, I don't know, Chris, when you were talking about stuff like forgiving people, I mean, I still think, oh, my brother drives me crazy, you know, and it's not him, it's me. You know, so there's just a lot that I have to work on. So I don't know, does that make any sense? Stuff I thought about. Thank you. Yeah, come on.
Why did I work in the slogan 7, 134? It's about train poor but deadly, about how you're training myself or something.
Can you read the whole slogan?
Train wholeheartedly. How I'm training myself.
Train wholeheartedly.
Yeah. How I'm training. How I'm training myself, right? So that's
great. I still haven't had the slogan that I can understand.
It's train wholeheartedly.
So the reason why I wanted to be learn from you all, and then I wanted to be I understand from this that whatever I do, I should dedicate fully so that I can able to learn more from all the whatever I do. I should able to learn more, and then only I can able to implement the same slogan in my life. Right, so that's the way. And the best part, I see that whenever I'm trying to learn something, my ideas go to the multiple places. So that's the reason behind we meditate and we concentrate one place so that I can able to concentrate more on the same part, and then I can able to achieve more faster in that way. So that's what overall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah.
I like my slogan. Whichever of the two occurs, be patient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good.
But there was a lot to ponder there. What came up was so whichever of the two. So I also considered each word and. There's always more than one. So even when one occurs, there's still whichever of the two occurs. And then that occurs. And then still there's whichever of the two. So and there's always an opportunity for patience. Always an opportunity for patience. And more patience. And then there was an essence of impermanence there. I'm not sure why, where there's a sense of change as things occur. How would I see the slogan applying to my life now? Acceptance, trust in what occurs, patience with equanimity. Compared to patients with distress.
If the two are getting what you want or not getting it, what you want, does that relate to it? Whichever of the two?
I didn't think of it in that context of getting what I want or not getting what I want. More accepting what is, and trying not to get pulled into the duality. To be present, and my humanness wants to anticipate or project most often. Just being aware of that. And are there ways I haven't yet applied every day in most things? So that was really good.
Thank you.
Mine was two activities, one at the beginning, one at the end. Mm-hmm. And so when I first read it, I took it in my usual concrete way, beginning of the day, end of the day. But then, obviously, I moved on to the stage of life I'm at, which is not the beginning of my life, obviously. It's more moving on toward, you know, toward the later years. And so what I came up with was, you know, that it's looking at what's important to me now. What was important to me in the beginning is different than what is important to me now. It's more, you know, my relationship with others is important to me. And you know, where maybe in the younger years, work, education, concrete things, and now the relationships that I have with other people and how I am with other people, whether I'm being what I would call a good person or not so good, or you know, you're just looking at what I do and what I feel and believe at this point in my life. And, so, and yeah, day and night, birth and death, you know, in between. It's sort of challenging. I found this challenging to think about.
What it occurs to me about this exercise is that at first with these slogans, it's like I've got to know what someone else said that they mean.
Yeah.
And there's got to be, you know, a right answer. Like yours is always, it's an actual process to think in the morning when you wake up about your day and how you're going to be, and at night to review and evaluate it. So I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, that's such a narrow view, and that when we apply the slogans more specifically to our own thought process, and this exercise really showed me the value of that, that mm-hmm. there are levels and levels and levels of richness in everyone, every slogan, and as you said, how was it in the past, how is it now? Because often I look at those with numbers and I go, I never can remember these. This is hopeless. But then I think there's another step to this, which is what is the essence of that slogan? Mm. And why would they have three of this or whatever? There's something beyond just looking at the surface and memorizing it. And I think that's sort of the way I learned it, and not very well, for sure. And so I'm appreciating this a lot. So I think I just wanted to thank you for bringing it to this in this way.
I couldn't have said it better in terms of thank you for summarizing what this exercise is about, and that, yes, there are plenty of books. Training the Mind by Chogyam Trungpa, which I too, like, I'll pick up mine and I'll look in the book and blah, blah, blah. But I also, it's so wonderful to hear, you know, yes, there's in the morning at night, but then there's when yeah. we've been born and when we die. There's something there that is speaking to all the many layers of what one slogan can be for us. At any point in our lives, it's available, and our innate wisdom is rich and always with us. And so that we don't have to think that there are other people that... No, this is ultimately the work that we're doing in this class, I feel, every single Thursday, is about cultivating our deepest innate wisdom and our compassionate selves for ourselves and for each other. And why not take the leap and see what this has to tell us today?